Carlos Santana and Al Di Meola playing your guitars, that's a big deal.
Everybody was rejecting you.
The offers were either non-existent or pretty weak. The idea of building a factory seemed daunting. I remember telling Walter Cronkite, I was trying to get him to invest. And he goes, I don't know, I just sold a guitar company. He was on the CBS board and he had just sold Fender. It wasn't called Paul Reed Smith at the beginning.
Is that true?
The prototypes for John Mayer, we tried every single radius, every scale length, every position, every body shape. We tried everything. This is the first time I'm going to say this on tape.
Paul Reed Smith?
Why are you having me here? Why?
Why do I have you here? You invited us into your home. By the way, this is what you
get. Is that how it went?
Well, this
I thought you called us.
I cold emailed you guys, yeah. That's how you get here.
So you can't blame a cold email on me.
No, but you said, what are you doing here?
That you cold emailed me, and we said yes, right?
Yes.
Okay, that's why you're here. Good.
So what was the question?
Why don't you come out, not shooting blanks, why don't you come out and hit me in the head with a rock? Why don't you come out and really swing?
Okay. Paul.
Yeah.
You had to
yell at me?
Am I too loud?
You were, does it feel like I'm yelling? It was close.
We'll lower the volume.
No.
We'll tone it down.
Let go.
Paul, I saw a guitar. You brought a guitar to Kramer to try to pitch them to build electric guitars.
How do you know about that?
I've got sources. I'm everywhere, Paul. Hold on, because I want to get into this.
Go on.
You said to come out swinging.
Okay, go on.
Originally, this was your plan. Your plan originally was to produce guitars for other manufacturers.
That's
that was
correct.
The idea.
Yeah.
You were going to sell this shape. The idea was to sell this shape to another manufacturer.
Licensing, yeah.
Was that the idea?
That was the idea. And you got to remember, at that time, Kramer was one of the largest guitar companies in the world, and the Floyd Rose Tremolo was their thing. So I had to make the prototype that they would consider with a Floyd on it. I went to Ovation. I went to Yamaha. I went to almost everybody and said, do you want to do this? And one guy says to me, I like the tuning pegs, the self-locking pegs. You'll do well with that. I said, that's not what I'm after, right? And so we ended up having to do it ourselves. I was kind of stunned. I thought, we had a good thing. I had Carlos Santana and Al Di Meola and Howard Leese's endorsers. I thought what was an interesting, for all things, Al Di Meola was trying to help me. He would call Yamaha, or he'd call this company or that company and said, I think you need to pay attention to what's going on here.
But you have said in interviews, I've heard you say this a lot, that you felt like everybody was rejecting you. Is that what you reference?
Well, I didn't get accepted by Yamaha at the time. I didn't get accepted by Kramer. They made a fair... The offers were either non-existent or pretty weak. I wanted to make a living. If I was going to make enough money to put my kids into college and make a living, I was willing to work hard. I had no problem with that. But the idea of building a factory seemed daunting.
So your original plan was just to go work for a guitar manufacturer. You really didn't think...
Or make a licensing deal and teach them, yeah.
You didn't think you were going to start your own company. That wasn't part of the plan.
You're the only one to ask me this question. This was in Musician Magazine a long time ago. And I don't know how you dug this article up. I don't know how you got the people from... There's one of the people from Kramer still in our industry all the time. You could have talked to Andy. I mean, where'd you get this
from? So did you...
Let me come out swinging. Where'd you get this from?
I have the best research team in the business, Paul.
That's not an answer.
But
how did you come up with this?
I'll tell you at the end. I'll tell you at the end.
Tell me now, I'll shut up and I won't say another word. You want to play chicken?
I've got a guy in the building, Paul. Somebody told me to ask about this.
Okay. Okay, now that's more fair of an answer. All right, go to the next thing. I'm going to get out of you at the end.
So you flew over to Kramer with a guitar.
You have the best research people in the business. You don't know anything about the group of research people I have here. You can't claim victory over my people. That's not the way it works.
But I'm just trying to understand.
I'm sorry. Eric's really good at this stuff.
To me, though...
I've been down every rabbit hole.
To me, though, I'm just trying to understand how you got here. So your original plan was...
I've never really answered this before, but I will for you because you really have well-researched this, all right? How'd I get here? I was, there's two kinds of people, you know, people talk about it and people do it. For me, I was always doing it. And I wanted these ideas that we had, which I thought were legitimate, you know. I mean, Carlos Santana and Al Di Meola and Howard Leese at that time playing your guitars, that's a big deal. And I thought that it deserved a shot, it deserved a chance. And so I would tell people what my idea was. And I remember telling Walter Cronkite, of all people, he was in my shop. I was trying to get him to invest. And he goes, I don't know, I just sold a guitar company. And I looked at him and I realized that he was on the CBS board and he had just sold Fender. And I was like, well, I guess I can't ask him again. He really did have a guitar company, you know. There's Walter Cronkite in front of me. And I don't think so. I just sold one. But I went out and convinced people of what the idea and the vision of it was. And
which was what? What was
well,
the vision?
I wanted to have a guitar company, and we wanted to go into competition with all the other companies. And the deal was actually pretty cool. I only got 5% of the company until we gave them all their money back. And there was something called a flip-flop where I would be able to have more of the company. But it wasn't until they got their money back. I think I was pretty determined and I was pretty clear about what I wanted to do. But it was all not just my determination, everybody around us. In a way, it's the American dream. Some kid in some bedroom comes up with some idea and everybody jumps on and says, we can make nothing into something, let's go. And if you interview the people who have been here, you know, since the beginning, they all tell you that's what they did. That's what Jack Higginbotham talks about all the time. He talks about, you know, he went home and told his wife, I think this guy's got a chance. I want to join the team and see if we, you know, it's worth a try.
But you have this.
So how did you get started? No, wait a minute. This is going to be a two-way conversation. You didn't just get to drill me. That's not the way it works. How'd you get started?
On what?
Doing what you're doing right now. Interviewing famous people.
Yeah.
To find out how the hell they got in the chair they're in.
This is my favorite thing in the world.
Okay, but I'm asking you the same question. Where did the idea come from?
I've wanted to do this my whole life, but I'm a musician. I've wanted to play guitar my whole life, too.
I saw you play guitar. You're a good guitar player.
That's a powerful endorsement. I'm going to put that on my one sheet. Paul Reed Smith.
You are.
You're a good guitar player.
Come on, he's a good guitar player, isn't he? I'm sorry, I can tell. I've been around a few of them.
By the way,
you need to ask me about how I met Tommy Emmanuel.
We're gonna get there.
All right.
I've wanted to do this forever. My whole life.
Yeah, but where'd you get your start? Wanting to do it and doing it.
I started on college radio
when
I was in college.
Yeah, there you go.
Started on the college radio station.
Yeah.
I would interview local venue owners and restaurant owners, and a lot of artists would come through. And then I started on my own.
So you got an honest start and then it progressed.
Yeah.
Okay, good. That's a good answer. I like that. In a way, same thing. I went and got people to play the guitars in our area, and then I started to get national acts to play them.
But you have, in this case over here, you have like one of your first guitars.
Yeah, it's like, it looks like another company's guitar, because in the beginning, you don't make your own guitar, you do a cover song. You don't write your own hit record first, you do Proud Mary, right?
But would you look at the other company's guitar?
Yeah.
And then there's a slab of wood sitting in front of you?
Well, no, I went and bought a piece that was the right size to make the guitar I wanted to make.
And how did you have a sense of how to cut it up and shape it?
I put the other guitar on top of it and drew around it and cut it out with a bandsaw.
So this was easy?
Nothing was easy.
But you make it seem kind of easy. So you would...
Well, for me, it was kind of easy.
Yeah.
For me, look, my son is a math teacher. And he's a math tutor, and he says, Daddy, there are three kinds of math. Numeric, 1 plus 1 equals 2, algebraic, solve for x, and geometric. And he said, you carry the third one, Daddy. And I was like, well, that's true. I can take a neck blank and rotate it around on my head like a video game. I mean, I can see it graphically. Algebra in my house was a screaming fight. I don't understand.
Because your dad was a math teacher,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but for them, I was algebra.
Yeah.
For me, it was, I'm sorry, trigonometry and geometry and all that, I could ace the tests and not study. Algebra failed. Awful. Bad yams, stinky potatoes. It wasn't good. Literally screaming fights in my ass. It's so easy. I'm like, I mean, leaving the kitchen table in tears, like out of my mind. It made no sense to me. But I'm sorry, I can't do calculus, but calculus is all vectors and angles. That I can do in my head.
But when you made this deal with your college professor, you said, I'm going to build this guitar for college credit.
That happened.
And he goes, okay, deal. Did you go, oh, crap, how am I going to do that?
No, I already knew exactly.
You felt, I'm going to get away with murder on this.
No, and I didn't say that either. I didn't know what the grade was going to be, but I knew I was hell-bent determined to do it. My girlfriend left me in the middle of it. I built the second half of it in tears.
Is that what made it what it was?
No, it was just a lot of pain.
Just a lot of pain.
Yeah. So, I didn't have a thing to make the neck level, so I borrowed a huge mirror, which was a flat piece of glass, and I used that to level things. I mean, I cut it out with my teeth and, you know, X-Acto knives. I didn't have anything real. I didn't have real CNC machines. That didn't exist.
Did you have any resource at all, or it was literally just looking at the other guitar?
I had teachers. I would go ask the head violin maker at Weaver Violin, Joe Wallow, you know, or I would ask my shop teacher, or I'd ask this person. I was always draining people from information. When they start repeating yourself, you got it all. You know, I always, if you want to learn how to fish a river, you can spend 10, 15 years doing it, or you can find the old man's been doing it his whole life, and he can leapfrog you 10 years forward in 2 days, just like that. I started with the people that were already doing it, and I talked to them. I had teachers. I had people, teachers for business, teachers for machining, teachers for woodworking. I had lots of teachers.
What's the trick to being a great mentee?
Not mentor, but you mean the person
mentee.
That's the person learning?
Yes. Because you have to motivate, you have to go to these incredible people like Ted McCarty, and you have to find a way to motivate them to help you, right? And to make it feel really genuine.
Great teachers are interesting. It's done one-on-one. They throw a piece of meat over the fence, and if you don't attack it, they don't throw any meat over the fence anymore. I have one of those now. And if I don't do what he said, it's over. He goes, did you ever, you know, try Belden 3175 wire? It's like, oh, no, he wants me to rewire my whole studio. I'm calculating how much it's going to cost me in time and money to do it in my end. But if I don't do it, that's it. It's over. So I did it. And then he throws another, you know, piece of meat over the fence to see if you're interested. How many movies have been done where some young whippersnapper knocks on the door, the old man's a curmudgeon in the thing, what do you want? Well, I'd like to learn, I'm going to kill you. You know, how many movies have been done that way? But that's the way it's done. So what's the secret to being a good student? Find a real expert and do what he says. So the definition of an expert is somebody in a very complicated area that solves very complicated problems over and over again. That's an expert. And I would find these brilliant or genius experts and I'd tackle them. Help me. Teach me. Nobody over 50 wants to die with skills. They want to teach somebody. And if somebody's standing there going, I want to learn, you know.
But you have to be really pushed to call Ted McCarty, right?
No, I wanted to call him really badly. I was frightened.
You were frightened to do it.
I was frightened, and Clay Evans kept saying, call him. And I said, I can't do that. He said, call him. I can't. So I called him, and he picked up the phone.
And he said, I'm not going to come out to you, but you can come to me.
Well, that's kind of what happened. Where are you getting your stories from?
I've got the best research team.
I know, somebody is inside trading on me. He said, I can't come because early on I had a dislocated retina and I was early on in the laser thing and they perforated my retina and I can't see, so I don't want to fly. So I went and saw him. At the end of the first day, he got really angry. I said, what's wrong, Ted? He goes, nobody's ever asked me these questions. All they wanted to do was find out how they could get rich quick. Did I have a Les Paul in my basement? Was there a flying bee in my basement? Did I have an Explorer in a basement? Nobody wanted to know I glued the frets in. Nobody wanted to know how I dried the tops. You're asking me all the guitar making questions. He goes, that's how I made my living and nobody's asked me. He was resentful that nobody at Gibson had called him up to find out how they did it. And here was me asking questions. And I wanted to know everything. He let me come out to Maui with him and I interviewed him all day long. And when I started repeating myself, I had it.
And is there anything on a surface level that is just worth sharing? Like anything?
What's a surface level?
Surface level. Like, I'm sure he said so much, but is there anything, any great takeaways that people might not think about?
Where'd the word humbucking come from?
So I want to buck the hum.
Yeah, but that's not exactly what he said. He said, well, I told my engineer to get me something to buck the hum.
That's it?
That's Seth Lover. His engineer was Seth Lover, right? Yep. And he wanted something that bucked the hum. And here was the guy that invented the word humbucking, kind of.
Yeah.
He's told me so many things that were mind-boggling. This is the best one. And I've told this story
before. This is
what
I want. Okay. Give me a win. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so, you know, just for everybody's edification, all the questions he told me he was going to ask me, he hasn't asked me one. So I'm sitting in a restaurant with him, and he's fairly blind, you know. He goes, I just saw a bar in the shape of a failure. I said, what the hell are you talking about? No, I saw a bar in the shape of a failure. And I started to interview him, and I realized he had been in a Hard Rock Cafe, and the bar was the shape of a flying V. And in his mind, because they only could sell 40 of them and then nobody reordered, it was a failure. I said, no, Ted, that was no failure. That was unbelievable. He goes, what are you talking about? I said, they're legends. They're just legends. I said, why'd you do it? Well, Leo was talking a bunch of shit about us. And he said, we were a bunch of old fogies, couldn't do anything new. So I did the Explorer and the Flying V to shut him up. I said, did it work? He said, yeah, it worked great. True story.
So even then, he felt that those two designs were failures.
Yeah, but not to shut Leo up, telling the whole world with a bunch of old fogies couldn't do anything new. He said, they put them in stores in these rotating, you know, things, and people looked at them, but they didn't buy them.
And did he say anything about the Modern or no?
No, the Modern wasn't mentioned. But there were four of those made there, and I actually think I know where there is one, but you know, you could name your price for that thing.
Yeah. So, but going back to the start of the company, and then I've got a lot to talk about.
The start of which company?
Paul Reed Smith. PRS.
PRS.
It's PRS.
It wasn't called Paul Reed Smith at the beginning.
Is that true?
Yeah, it was called PRS.
PRS.
The original logo didn't say Paul Reed Smith. It said PRS Guitars. That was it.
So how did you get your first, you had to get, I think, $300,000 in sales. And then you felt, someone said to you, if you get $300,000 in sales.
What he said was, if you come back with $100,000 of orders,
yeah,
I'll get you the money for the company. I came back, put $300,000 of the orders on his desk. And he didn't end up helping me raise the money. But somebody named Warren Esson, who wrote the prospectus on my kitchen table in Bonhaven.
And that?
And we sold it out. We had till April 1st it opened up. It was sold out April 7th in 1985.
What do you think sold them? Was it a combination of the guitar? And I'm sure.
The endorsers were a big deal.
The endorsers is what sold
them. Well, and I think I was probably pretty enthusiastic. We were only trying to raise $500,000. It wasn't that much money. It wasn't like a startup now where you need $5 or $10 million or $100 million. It wasn't that much money. The interesting moment was that when we made the first guitars and we shipped them out and we got paid, that's one thing. But if we didn't get reorders, company was over. And we got reorders. That was the big deal. The big deal was the day we started getting reorders.
I heard a story from Joe Glazer.
How do you know Joe?
Joe's a really good friend of mine.
Joe Glazer's brilliant.
Joe's spilling your dirty laundry, too. I'm just kidding. Here's what he says. He helped you get some pickups.
Right, Joe, I'm not going to spill your schooling.
He helped you get some pickups.
Yeah.
And in exchange, you gave him your wood guy.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true?
Yeah.
So what did he help you with, and was it painful?
I needed humbucking coils to make the original prototypes out of.
And he sourced them for you.
Well, he had them as parts in his shop, probably. And we hadn't made the molds for the bobbins yet. We hadn't made the molds for the basses or the, you know, all the stuff. And I introduced him to Michael Reed, who's still with us.
How did you have a wood guy, though, at that time?
I had gone to the only guy that had Curly Maple in the whole tri-state area, and he gave me basically the wood to make Carlos Santana's guitars. He didn't believe me, but he would look through the scrapbook and he saw Carlos's pictures and stuff. He realized it was real. And Joe needed Curly Maple, and, you know, he started buying it from Michael. But Michael wanted to be the woodmeister. He was a cabinet maker, and he thought that the idea of being the person to buy the wood was a good idea. And we made a handshake deal that we've never signed a piece of paper about.
Did you feel, though, like you were giving this trade secret to Joe, though?
Or no, it was I an felt easy... like I was taking care of a friend that was taking care of me.
Yeah. Easy enough.
No. Oh, yeah. That's the way it does. Isn't that the way it works?
Yeah. That's how it works. So, Paul.
I mean, did you get sent here by Beato or?
By who?
Rick. Yeah.
No. What? Did I get sent here?
Yeah.
No. I've wanted to interview my whole life, Paul.
Interview him or me?
You.
Oh, shit. Okay. I don't even want to go down that road. Go to the next question. Why don't you come up with a real question?
Paul, let's talk about...
That was funny over here.
Let's talk about fretboard radiuses, okay?
Really? You're going to bring that one up?
No?
No, no. Bring it up.
Paul, this is...
This one kind of pisses me off.
This is what I've been trying to understand my whole life, because my whole life, they tell us that 7 1/4 radius, which is kind of a traditional...
Fender
radius, you can't play solos on. And the Silver Sky is 7 1/4.
Okay, that was not true when I was young, so there must be a huge age difference between us. How old are you?
Well, I'm reading the internet.
How old are you?
I'm 29.
Okay, and I'm 67. Yeah. Okay, I'm 69. So, shit, I just took 2 years off for fun. When I was a kid, nobody said you can't play solos on a Tele or a Strat. Nobody said that. That's new internet lore. And so when we made the prototypes for John Mayer, we tried every single radius, every scale length, every position, every body shape. We tried everything. And he goes, I want it to be the same as the guitar I'm used to. I don't want to look down when I play. So we made it 7 1/4. And everybody pushed back. Bad idea, bad idea, bad idea. You can't play solos on a 7 1/4 inch radius. I don't know. I thought Sultans of Swing sounded pretty good. I thought Machine Gun sounded pretty good. I thought Gilmore sounded pretty good. I just thought it was a bunch of hooey. What I did know is if you don't have it dead straight, the neck made well and dead straight, then when you bend a note up, if the frets aren't level and it's not dead straight, sometimes the note will choke out because it's going over a hump. That I understood. But the idea that you couldn't play solos on something that people have been playing solos on forever, whether it be country music or whatever, just seemed Looney Tunes to me. And what hurts me is when people attack in a way that they, you know, they're so adamant about it that they know what they're talking about. Sometimes they do, but sometimes they don't. And from a guitar-making point of view and all the repairs that have been on my bench, these people are playing stunning solos. I'm sorry. One of the solos in LaGrange is on a Strat, from what I can hear. Sounded good to me. Sultans of Swing, but, you know, don't even get me started. Machine Gun is ridiculous. The solo in Machine Gun is stupid good.
So what is it, though? I guess you kind of explained, but it's the neck. Like, what are people not getting? Where are people getting tripped up on this? Because I've played 7 1/4 radius.
They've been told one thing, and that's got to be the truth. But they're getting tripped up. Look, it's a 7 1/4 inch radius circle. So 14 1/2 inch circle. It's the bend of a 14 1/2 inch pipe. That's what it is. If it's a 10 inch radius, it would be a 20-inch pipe, so it's a little flatter. If it's a 16-inch radius, it's a 36-inch pipe, 32-inch pipe, right? So to me, it's curved like your finger's curved. It's normal. The only flat fingerboards out there are a nylon string guitar is pretty much. And the way you play that, you put your thumb right in the back and you're pushing down this way. But I'm sorry, Hendrix had his hand wrapped around with his thumb. You watch people wrapping their thumb around all the time. Have you seen John Mayer play live?
Yes. Yeah.
What was your experience?
I wasn't thinking about the radius.
But you were listening to the music coming out of his hands.
Sounded great.
Have you seen Carlos live?
I've never seen Carlos Santana live.
Really good. Last person in the back, headed for the bathroom with a beer in his hand, is singing the melody he's playing. I mean, it's just stunning. They're not just good at recording music and having it be on the radio. They're really good playing at 20,000 people. It's a different art form. But by the way, Springsteen's really good at that.
Springsteen?
Yeah.
I've seen Springsteen. Springsteen's one of my favorites.
Yeah, well, he's one of the best performers that our industry ever produced.
But to wrap up this radius conversation.
It's not ever going to get right. You think you're going to wrap it up in this interview?
Let me tell you something. Right now, we're going to wrap up the radius conversation. Here we go. You ready?
Yeah, go ahead.
If you have a guitar that's a 7 1/4 radius and it is choking out when you bend those higher notes, is that just because the guitar was not made as well as it could have been, or is there something you can do to fix it?
The frets have to be leveled. That's an art form all by itself.
Yeah.
The bend of the neck and the from the truss rod has to be right. And if you have the saddle all the way down and you're expecting it to play with no height on the string, you're going to have a problem. But you know, John plays with really low action. He's bending the strings as much as a minor third, you know, 3/2 steps. It's not choking out. Look, this is the first time I'm going to say this on tape. These guitar players are race car drivers. They're literally like racing a car. It's literally that kind of thing where they're not just playing and being a part of the music, but they're also projecting this thing through this entire PA, the same kind of horsepower, and they know what they're doing. They're race car drivers. And if you accuse Tim Pierce of being a race car driver, you know what he says? Yeah, that's a good analogy. I'm sorry. Simon McBride playing nothing but stadiums now in Deep Purple, the race car driver. Brian May, race car driver. I'm sorry. When they, you know, that thing that they did in the movie was, they reproduced what they did that day. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
These guys, and there's a lot of women now too. By the way, Ronna Smith playing bass in Jeff Beck's band, she just kept getting rehired every tour. I said, how'd you get that good? She goes, I was in a training program called Prince. Sorry.
That's what does it.
Yeah, why not?
Okay, what's the Tommy story?
Tommy Emmanuel?
The Tommy Emmanuel story.
I'm in a hotel in New York, and I've gone to see Robin Ford play at the Bottom Line. And Robin Ford is in the hall in the hotel. And he gets in my face, and he says, don't miss the opening act. I said, whoa. He said, whatever you do, don't miss the opening act. I was being ordered to not be late. All right, I won't miss the opening act. All right, so I go and I sit down. I was in tears 3 times in the first 4 songs. He was on fire. I'm like, what is a Tommy Emmanuel? You know, he thinks at an alarming speed. He actually talks pretty fast too. I mean, he acts with speed. He thinks is the speed he plays. But he was imitating billabongs and making sounds of other worlds, and when he kicked into Day Tripper and he was playing and then he gets da 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 da, and then he gets da 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 da, all the parts.
That's my favorite thing he does.
Well, that's an old thing that he's been doing for a really long time, but I couldn't talk. I was like, this guy's the Jimi Hendrix of the acoustic guitar. This is ridiculous. But Robin Ford got in my face and he said, don't miss the opening act. I didn't know what a Tommy Emmanuel was. Whoa. And at that time he had big racks and, you know, there was all these lights going on and off and there was stuff coming out of the PA. I just couldn't believe. And it was, there were subs hitting me in the chest from an acoustic guitar. I'd never experienced it before. He knows what he's doing. I mean, flat out, Tommy Emmanuel flat out knows what he's doing.
Paul, how do you keep these relationships with some of the most successful musicians in the world and keep engaging with them and they keep coming back to you? Maybe it's because of the guitars, but I think it's more than that.
They need tools to play music on. They need, it's a physics converter. The force and the finesse that they have turning into sound, it's a physics converter. We need their support, otherwise nobody would buy guitars from us. It's a symbiotic relationship. And, you know, I have a dinner pretty much every year, other than COVID, where we get all the techs together in LA and all the people that support all the musicians and do, you know, the building of the studios or the microphones or John Mayer's guy that, you know, catalogs all his gear that he has or whoever it is. We all get together and have dinner together. And to me, I see myself as a tech who plays guitar, who understands generally what they want, but you have to really listen. They'll tell you what they want. Carlos Santana said to me once, he says, well, let me tell you something, Paul. I live in an emotional world and you live in an engineering world and we got to figure out how to communicate. So how do I do it? I do it by just treating them like human beings and listening as hard as I can to what they want and trying to get them what they want. I mean, they're very clear about what they want, but it might not be in engineering terms. That guitar we did for Herman Lee, we spent 10 years on that thing. That piece of engineering, it was hard work. I don't know. How do I do it? By trying to get them results and treating them like human beings and not asking for their autograph. That's not, you know, taking pictures with them and asking for autographs. That's not what they want. They want somebody to help them accomplish their goals.
But when you go out to dinner with John, let's say, do you talk about all this or you talk about anything but?
There's no agenda. Whatever it is. I saw him do something genius at dinner one time. And I had to back up from the table. I make guitars. I'm not worthy. I couldn't believe what he had done. And I looked at the drummer who's now plays in the Stones, Steve Jordan.
Yeah.
I looked over at Steve, and Steve didn't act like anything special happened. I went, oh, no, he does it all the time. And
what was it? It was just something he said?
He went into 45 seconds of imitating the best comedians in history and doing bits they'd never done as well or better than all of them. I couldn't talk. I mean, we're talking about Richard Pryor and Chappelle, and he went in 45-second tirade. So I saw Jeff Beck play this close. In 45 seconds, he went from Broadway into blues, into Jeff Beck, into jazz rock, back into Jeff Beck, back into blues, back into Broadway, without stopping in perfect succession. And it wasn't how good a guitar player he was that was so stunning. What was stunning is his encyclopedia of knowledge was unbelievable. And the guitar player played with him for a while told me once, it's not what Jeff plays on stage, it's what he plays backstage. And boy, was she right. Oh my God. I was stunned. It was really something. And he knew who he was. I think Jeff Beck gave and he 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 gave and then he blew up. I think that what he did for our industry was extraordinary. I mean, you watch that thing at Ronnie Scott's. I'm sorry. You see all the people in the audience and there's, you know, there's Robert Plant. You know, everybody in the whole industry's there watching him. When Jeff Beck was on, it was the Tommy Emmanuel electric guitar in it.
Yeah. So, okay, wait, I know we have to wrap up soon. I've heard.
I'm not in a hurry.
You I'm not in a hurry either.
You want to keep going? You can keep going.
I've heard this story, and I want to know if it's true or not, but it'll lead to another question. I've heard a story that someone brought you a 59 Les Paul and said, do not touch this. And when they came in the next morning, the entire guitar was in pieces across your bench, every part of it.
That never happened.
That never happened?
Of course not. I would never do that.
Fair.
Never happened.
Fair. I believe you. But you have taken $5,000 pickups and destroyed them, right? You've said this online. This is out there.
Of course I have. How else am I going to find out how a 63 Strat pickup was waxed unless I took a razor blade to it?
So
what was more important to me was all of our customers' experience, not the money. I mean, I know I was taking a, $3,000 pickup and I was taking a razor blade to it, but the $3,000 meant nothing to me. What meant something to me is that John and all the customers that believed in John were happy, and I needed to know, and I found that something fascinating.
But is there any, like you've said in interviews too, there was you and Eric Johnson went to shoot out like the perfect Marshall head.
Yeah, we did.
That and when happened. You found it, you took the head apart, right?
Well, that's not exactly what happened.
Okay, set the record straight. Yeah.
We bought about 10 Marshalls, and we were looking for the best output transformer. We found one. It was an old PA top. And I said, Eric, I'm going to take it apart. I hope Eric's okay with me telling a story.
This is already out there.
Okay, but I didn't tell it the way I'm going to tell it.
Tell it.
He goes, no, it's the best sounding transformer ever. I said, Eric, I don't want one. I want thousands.
Yeah.
And he goes, I said, Eric, what are you going to do? I'm going to take it apart. I'm going to find out what the laminations are. I'm going to find out how it was wound. I'm going to find out what this one, because with all due respect, every year at Marshall, they all sounded different. And there were reasons, right? And he hung up. Next day, he calls me up. He goes, what'd you find? True story. And what we had found was fascinating. It was not at all what you would think it was. The laminations were a kind of sheet metal. They weren't grained laminations from what people use now. And the winding scheme was some genius had done. The winding scheme inside was spectacular. We unwound it turn by turn and measured everything.
And what did that lead to?
We're making transformers with Triad. They're unbelievable.
So where
they sound so musical. I mean, we've taken apart almost all of them, all the old dual Showman and Twins and Marshalls and, but we needed to find what was the Holy Grail. Look, vintage gear, for the most part, doesn't keep its promise. Its promise is we're so much better than everybody else, right? But once in a while, oh my God, does it keep its promise? Once in a while, these engineers knew what they were doing.
But where do you feel, and I'm just curious, like with those $5,000 pickups that you had, was there any remorse or do you feel
God, no. You want me to go get you the parts? I'll give you some. They're hanging on my wall. No, remorse?
No, yeah.
Thank God we did it.
What were they, 63 pickups?
I'll give it the wire that's in an old PAF and the wire that's on a 63 Strat picker were made in the same factory. The color of that wire, that maroon color, that's not because they added dye to the coating. It's because the coating was burnt. So that coating, that's how it came out of the oven, right? So to me, learning about all that stuff is incredibly important. The dye that made some of that wire is on my desk. So I get it from the grandson.
Yeah, I saw you have the little roller, the original roller.
It's a dye, right.
But that's what you learned by taking...
Well, it wasn't just that, but what are the magnets? What's the winding scheme? What's the wire? What's the coating? How tight is it? How is it waxed? Everything. We wanted to know because there were certain things in those old pickups that weren't being reproduced, and I did not buy that it was the age. I bought that there was something different about it, and it's true. Look, When Cries Mary is debatably one of the greatest rhythm guitar sounds ever recorded, right? Brand new guitar, brand new amp. Don't tell me it's because it's old. I mean, you know, it's not the way it works. So to me, if Dummel was alive today, he could take all new parts and make some sort of magic amp because it was his knowledge base. What really upsets me about the Stradivari thing is the reason Stradivarius violins sound good is the paint. The reason is because of the fungus. The reason is that, okay, the paint did have something to do with it. There was uric acid, you know, because they cured everything in those days in sheep's piss. So there was uric acid in the wood. You know, there was fungus in the wood, as if there was more fungus in his shop than the guy down the street, and he'll buy it. But the truth is, nobody says the reason Stradivarius has sounded good is because the old man knew what he was doing. And that really is upsetting to me, because if he was alive today, he'd be having a field day. The thing that was genius about it is those were gut-stringed instruments with shorter scale. The French changed all the necks, changed the neck angles, and put new bass bars in them. And, you know, I just recently met an incredibly gifted violin maker. I said, do you believe in these bass bars that the French put in? He goes, sometimes yes, mostly no. They have their opinions about it. Even having a field day with private stock colors, you know.
Where does the idea come from about a truss rod and a neck? And if you get rid of the truss rod,
it's not a new concept.
It's not a new concept,
no.
Right?
There was no truss rod in the Stradivari cello.
Yeah.
There was no truss rod in an old Martin. It was a piece of steel about this long, which was square and hollow. It was a strength rod. There was an old Dan Electro, In My Time of Dying, ran it. It's got a piece of aluminum in a neck. It's not a new concept.
Yeah.
What's a new concept is that you don't need this customer service device in the neck called a truss rod to straighten it. It's a little sacrilegious, but it works. I mean, we can get into that another day. We have learned so much in this building about how to get guitars to sound better acoustically. This whole idea that the acoustics don't make any difference is Looney Tunes. The other day we asked AI, if you make the same guitar out of balsa wood and you make the same guitar out of mahogany, which one will sound better? AI came back and said, by far, the balsa one will sound worse than the mahogany one. But you'll believe AI, but you're not going to believe me.
I mean, come
on. It's just, don't take the one thing out. One of the pieces of the puzzle away that the wood doesn't make any difference. It does make a difference.
What are the characteristics? I'm a Tele guy.
Yeah.
This thing right here is kind of like.
So why don't you get one?
It's, well, we'll talk about that. Oh, we'll talk about it offline. We'll talk about it. But what was the process to get this to kind of do the Tele thing?
All right, look, Teles are wonderful instruments, but they have a couple of problems. One is that they'll lose it up on the high E string. It goes da-da-da-da-da, ee! Right? You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That one doesn't do that.
Right.
We worked really hard to stop that. Second thing is the bass pickup is so weak and it's got such a thick cover on it, the cover's stopping some of the signal from going through. The bass pickup is, to my ears, not very usable. That's why when people were putting humbuckings in the bass position or baby humbuckings in the bass position, or they were changing the bass pickup and Teles all the time, was a normal thing to do. I was trying to retain, with that guitar, retain all the good stuff about it and get rid of the bad stuff. That steel plate that's on the bottom of the treble pickup, it's copper colored. You ever seen it?
Yes, yeah.
Everybody thinks it's a piece of copper. It's not. It's a piece of steel with copper plating on it because the first step of nickel plating is you have to copper flash it. Since nobody's going to see it, they didn't nickel plate it. They just put the copper on there so the steel wouldn't rust.
Yeah.
What? That was interesting. I mean, we could go on and on about that guitar, but have you plugged one of these in?
I haven't plugged one in. I've played it a lot of
people have plugged them in. There's an old Tele here. There's a 53 Blackguard here.
Yeah.
Why don't you plug the 53 Blackguard and that guitar in and see which one wins upstairs on the end.
If we have permission from you, I'll do anything, Paul.
Yeah,
I'll do anything you say.
Sure.
How'd you guys come to the...
Actually, you won't, but that's the thing. I'm sorry.
But what was it a conversation, though, to put the pickup...
It's funny over here.
In the wood versus having the ashtray bridge on it?
The way the ashtray bridge works is you have three screws that control the tilt and the height of the pickup. The Ashtray Bridge was a form of a pickup ring. I didn't want to copy that. Let Fender have that.
Yeah.
What I wanted was something that did what the musician wanted it to do and not lose it up on the high string, have that spank, you know, have the bass pickup sound better, have it be carved so that the neck felt like, I mean, so look, so, hand me the guitar. Very, very often on a Tele, right in here, the neck is way thinner. Have you ever noticed that?
Yes.
Well, that's because they're sanding this and sanding this, and this gets double sanded.
Right.
I didn't want that. This doesn't have that problem.
Yeah.
Okay, second, I didn't want it to be starting to turn into heel right here. So I wanted it to be neck all the way to the end. Oh, good. Now it's really worth less money. I wanted it to not lose it on the high strings. I wanted to use the same diameter barrels that the old ones used. If you leave it on the outside of the barrel and you don't cut into it a little bit, very often the high E string will buzz and you need to notch it a little bit. You know, it's not well understood. I wanted this to be easy to use. Sometimes Teles are a little weird to get down here.
Yeah.
I like Telecasters. You can play anything from jazz to hard rock on a Telecaster.
That's why.
Guess what? You can play anything from jazz to hard rock on this. But I was trying to get rid of the problems and retain the character of the sound that you're familiar with. I'm a Tele guy. Maybe you're a guitar guy. You just happen to like Telecasters.
That might be it. Is that what I should start saying
from now on? You want to play catch?
Good. I've heard that you throw guitars, and I was very nervous about
that. Guitar people don't drop them.
Is that true? You've never seen...
Did you just drop it?
No.
And then hang it back up and shove it.
That's a good mantra right there. Guitar players don't drop guitars.
Guitar people
don't drop guitars.
You ever see Springsteen's Tech drop the Tele when he throws it at the end of
the
show?
Have you ever seen the Super Bowl, though? When he did the Super Bowl, he almost drops it. Have you ever seen that?
No.
He almost drops it. He goes, whoa, it flies out of his hand. Almost drops it. Generally speaking, though, he never drops it, though, right?
Guitar people don't drop guitars.
Yeah. Paul, what is the thing that you think people might take your guitars apart and look at? Future guitar builders. What are they going to take apart and study?
I don't know. But I have a story about this. It's a little different.
Yeah.
Whatever the people at Fender thought in 1953 is in that guitar. Whatever they thought in 58 is in that Strat. Whatever we thought the day we made that is in that guitar. If you want to talk to the people that made it, it will tell you what they thought because that's what was in it. 1176s had what? 9 or 10 different modifications. That's what they thought as they went along. I like listening to old instruments and amps talk. They'll tell you what the maker was trying to do. You know, their best thinking on that day is in that amp or that guitar or the PA or whatever it is, that old piece of studio gear. I don't know. I really like looking at the engineering and understanding the engineering of old pieces of gear. There's a really famous person in our industry named Stephen Hazleton, and Hazleton is better at RCA, old RCA gear than anybody fixing it. You send him a BA6A, which is an old compressor. He's the one to fix it. He goes, you know, one of the goals I have is to retain the reputation and genius of these old RCA engineers. They really knew what they were doing, and I've dedicated my life to getting their stuff working again so people will remember what geniuses there were at RCA, which I think is, it's kind of a noble, lovely goal, right? Boy, is he good at fixing stuff. I sent him a BA-21A. I use it constantly. It's the go-to for almost everything.
Yeah.
I only have one of his that he fixed, but maybe I should have more, but I doubt. I don't know. I said something about the original Hotcake with a switch on it. You can't even find one of those anymore.
The pedal.
Yeah.
Those are unbelievable, aren't they?
The one with the switch.
They're incredible.
The one with the knob, doesn't call my name, but the one with the mid-range switch, that's just ridiculous.
What do you think? I know you've read a lot of books about sales, and you're such a great salesman, but you do in such a genuine, passionate way. I don't know if you're
I've never read a book about sales.
Well, you said that in an interview.
Well, it might have been The Greatest Salesman in the World, the little teeny book, but it was more of a motivational book than it was a sales book. There are four ways to sell.
Yeah. See, I knew you'd have an answer to this.
There are four ways to sell. This I was taught by a salesman. You can sell on price. I got the best price. I'm the cheapest guy in town, right? You can sell on reputation or on relationship. You know, I have a really good relationship with you, so you buy from me. He's my guy, you know. Sweetwater does that. It's my engineer, right? You can sell on quality. This is the best one in the market. But there's a new way to sell, which is you order it in the morning and it'll be on your doorstep this afternoon. Whoa, that one's powerful. I mean, literally, you could call Home Depot and have most of the stuff to build a house on your porch in the afternoon. They'll send the trucks over with everything. That's unbelievable. So, you know, I realized if a guitar maker who made unbelievably good instruments was just kind of rude and nasty and not nice to people, you'd still probably buy their guitars because you're after that instrument. If you have a real sweetheart and the instruments aren't very good, he's not going to sell on quality, right? He might sell on relationship. To me, you got to hit them all. You've got to have the price right. You've got to have a good relationship with the person. In God's words, you have to have the guitar be what it's got to be, you know? And now it's how fast can I get it, you know? And when the internet started on sales, people could return the guitar after 4 days. And if they didn't like it, they could return it, which is part of the safety of buying it sight unseen, untouched, but, you know. I don't know. I was raised by mathematicians. And I went to a trade show once. And one guy at the trade show had a stack of hundreds this deep. And he was doing all the deals and everybody else standing around. I went to White Plains, and the best salesman at the Sam Ash in White Plains was Ralph Perucci.
That's where I bought my first guitar, White Plains Sam Ash.
So that sales guy, who was the fundamental basis of that, and a guy named Jimmy Wallace from the Big Venice Show in Dallas, I hired them both and watched them sell in my booth, and they had a pad out, and they were right before the guy even said hello. I mean, it was stunning how good a good salespeople are. And I didn't know about that. So I hired him and watched him. And boy, did I watch. You ever met Steve Pisani? He can sell anything to anybody.
No.
But he was the main sales guy at the Sam Ash on 48th Street.
Yeah.
A good salesman is worth the weight in gold.
I think, though, what I love to me, what it is you get so it's impossible to not get excited about these instruments when you see how excited you are about them. That's what's contagious. That's what sells them. Are you aware of that, or do you not? Or you're just naturally so excited about them? But I'm telling you, that sells the instruments.
I find genuine. You ask very interesting questions. I find genuine enthusiasm based in knowledge and expertise to be very enrolling. Listen to somebody really excited about how well they play guitar. They can't play their way out of a paper bag. It's not the most interesting thing in the world to me. But somebody's, you know, when John Mayer was here, he was singing melodies all day long. He was a melody machine. I mean, he had, David Grissom told me, I have music in my head all day long. Carlos Santana, you're looking for him before the show. He's in the back studying some new band, playing. I've seen Eric Johnson run off the stage in New York and go upstairs and start practicing again. I was like, are you kidding me? So for me, it's not the guitars that excite me. What excites me is you're going to have 100,000 people watching this thing. And for me to be able to reach them with the honesty is incredibly important. Look, all I have is my honesty. If you tell the truth, then you don't have to go backwards and cover for a lie, you know. I know what the honesty around that guitar was that I showed you, you know, and the problems that Fender had with sanding the necks at one point. And, you know what's interesting? There's a museum in La Crosse, Wisconsin at Dave Rogers, Dave's Music. You pick up a 53 Tele and a 53 Les Paul, the neck shapes are almost exactly the same. Hmm. They believed that was the shape of your hand at the time. But that nobody thinks of a Les Paul neck shape and a old Tele neck and a Tele neck shape as the same shape. But I'm telling you, at one point they were very, very close. One was a little narrower than the other at each end, but they were really close. I think that's fascinating. I mean, it shouldn't be that hard to make a stick about that long. It feels comfortable in your hand.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard.
We're wrapping up here with Paul Reed Smith.
Yeah, really? Is that who you're talking to?
Paul.
Wow.
Can we have the five guitar solos every student guitar player should learn? This is going to be a viral short right here. This is going to explode on the internet.
Well, you're going to announce that it's going to go viral before it does.
Absolutely.
That's not the way viral works.
Well, we'll cut that part out.
Oh, you're going to edit that part?
I'm just telling you, no pressure, because everyone's going to see this. The
you should learn, five you guitar should learn a solo in that came from Fleetwood Mac that Carlos did in Black Magic Woman. That's beautiful, right? He's playing through the changes.
That's one.
Okay, then you got to learn a solo in, of all things, Smoke on the Water. It's changing keys. And it's not so easy to play. It's a beautiful solo.
Have you ever learned that solo? Where'd Mac go? You ever learned that solo? Smoke on the Water, that guitar solo? Okay.
It's magic. It's absolutely beautiful.
That's two.
Since we ended as lovers. Because we ended as lovers.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
That's wow. What a, now, that's not a solo. That's a melody. See, what you're asking for are solos, and I'm giving you melody.
That's great. That's fair. That's fair game. You played that yourself at the PRS.
Well, that was a little scary.
Yeah.
1,100 guitar players in a room, and you go after that tune. John Mayer's tech, Jeremy was there. That's Jeff Beck's tech, one of Jeff Beck's techs, right? And I was like, he goes, they're not going after that. No,
yeah,
no.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's three. I think that's three
that's
or four.
Three.
That's three. Two more.
Waiting for the bus.
ZZ Top. How that is the best. 7 1/4 radius. I don't know.
Well, I don't think in that solo. I think that was his last
solo. That was Burley Gates, yeah.
I'd like to tell you the live version of Angel from...
Montgomery?
No.
No.
The live version of Angel from Atlanta Rhythm Section. Mm. Because it was so melodic. But if you're going to learn one, learn a solo in The Wind Cries Mary. Wow. Now, you're missing a pile, comfortably numb.
No, these are five.
No, I don't care. My job's to change the rules. Your job's to make rules.
All right, give me a couple more.
You're missing a whole bunch.
Do not box in Paul Smith. He will get out of that box.
You could learn John Mayer's solo in Vultures. You know,
that's one of my favorite John Mayer songs.
Europa.
Hmm.
No One Came?
No One Came.
Here, give me a guitar.
What do you want, the acoustic?
Yeah, yeah. So there's a No One Came is the solo when No One Came. That's a Deep Purple tune.
Yeah. How fun is that?
I'm sorry, it's all melody, the whole thing. But it's not so easy to play. But, I mean, just that lick. I mean, that just that's the lick.
Yeah, of course.
Most people play Smoke on the Water wrong.
That's true.
You know, he did it with his fingers.
Yeah.
You know, and it's along with the organ.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. It's ridiculous.
Were you upset when you talk about this moment?
How about the pump? Why don't you learn that?
Ah.
I mean, you learn something from that. I mean, it's beautiful,
yeah.
Right? These guitar players made their living on these melodies. You know, it wasn't just, as Carlos Santana says, no song, no band.
That's it, right?
Yeah. You know, do you ever listen to the French guy in Ace play How Long, the solo in How Long? Do you ever listen to it?
I don't think so.
Unbelievable. Here, Carlos Santana says, if you ever learn the solo in Light My Fire, good luck, Paul.
Yeah.
And he meant good luck. Like, it's really hard. So to me, what I did was I learned all the vocals on Fire and Water and learned all the vocals on the guitar. And Carlos Santana said he had learned all the vocals at Dionne Warwick's side. You want to learn how to play melodically, learn a vocal on a guitar. To me, that's the thing. If you sat down and learned the entire vocal on Fire and Water, which is a free record, you're going to know melodies at the end because it's all melodies. To me, the guitar player should really, top five, pick your top five songs and learn the vocal on the guitar. By the way, most people can't play Three Blind Mice. All right. You think it's easy, right? Da 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 da.
Learn that.
Yeah, no. Sorry, the next parts really are. Most people can't play Happy Birthday on a guitar.
How did you learn to play guitar? Did you ever take lessons or were you self-taught?
Oh, no, I sat down and learned.
I know we're in overtime.
Actually, I've never, ever told anybody this, but let me show you. So, Carlos Santana was a genius at playing two notes and everybody knew who it was, just like that, right? And I think it's on Barbaletta. I knew that I didn't need an amp or a distortion box to learn it. If I could play it with the record player, the same hearing it with my ears, then I could play it distorted, right? And he went. And I took 2 weeks learning what I just played you. For me, that was the keys to the city.
Yeah.
The keys to the city was to be able to go. See, he does a vibrato the first one. And he vibratos the second one.
That's what you got into. That's how you figured.
Or.
Yeah.
Sampled by T.
Did you feel defeated when you had to, you basically made a decision because you say that when you would play music, people would run, but I'm sure that's kind of a little bit of hyperbole. You said when you would open a case, they would gather.
No, nobody wanted to hear me play.
Did that feel defeated though?
No, I never felt defeated. But guitar making matured young and the guitar playing matured late.
Yeah.
So I'm in a band with the Granger Brothers now, and I'm sorry, that's a school. That is a school. But I'm showing you that those, if you want to learn a melody, learn a melody, right? I'm sorry, this is not so easy. It took me weeks.
Yeah.
Well, the beginning of, You know exactly what it is, right?
It's perfect, yeah.
Theme.
Isn't that one of the greatest?
To me, or this.
Black Magic Woman.
Learn a melody.
Learn a melody.
Learn a melody. It's not so easy. And you know, guitar players, that's not a melody. Unless Eric Johnson does it.
There are exceptions.
There are exceptions. I'm sorry. Our industry is full of gifted geniuses. They're full of gifted geniuses. But, you know, you're asking me, what should you learn? What's the top five thing? Melody one, melody two, melody three, melody four, and melody five. Then you're good.
And when to vibrato?
Well, actually, vibrato is a whole other animal, and that took me a month in my bedroom to learn how to do it. But when the guy wiggled the note, that was the thing that got me. So that's why I learned how to do it.
Paul, you are one of those geniuses.
Stop.
What are you talking about, Paul?
No, you're not going to go there. I know what the definition of brilliance is, and I know the definition of genius is, and I know which department I'm in. We ain't going there.
What's the definition? What is the definition?
Brilliance is when you make a giant leap, and if somebody asks you how you did it, you can back up and tell them the whole thought process. Genius is when you go farther and you can't tell them how you did it. Stevie Wonder doesn't know how he wrote I Wish. I can tell you how I wrote everything. I can tell you exactly what the thought process and all that was. So don't go there. Why don't you just re-ask? Why don't you come up with a new ending?
One of the brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
The brilliant minds.
That's sweet.
In the guitar world.
How about the guy that never gives up? I do go after not
the guy that never gives up. I'm inspired too by
that part. Yeah. I'll take that.
That too, but I look at your company and it is inspiring to me how now I feel like every year of my guitar playing life, you become more and more and more and more recognized. And now you're more recognized than you were 5, 10 years ago. And you were so recognized back then. But you continue to build a company that grows and grows and grows.
Turning 70 has its interesting effects. It's either now or never. Actually, I think this company is peaking right now.
Yeah.
I think we're doing really well. I think right now is our 1959 or our 1963 or whatever year.
Are these guitars going to become the vintage guitars people collect in 100 years or 50 years?
No, I can't tell you how it's going to respond, but I can tell you that group of people out there is doing a really good job making guitars right now, and I'm really proud of them. That part, now you want me to get enthusiastic? Go watch Dan Davis work for a day. Go watch some of these people work for a day.
Really quickly, we were out there this morning and we were getting a tour and we were at final inspection.
Yeah.
And we were talking to one of the guys and he showed me the guitar and I go, see that? That's got to go back. And I'm looking at the guitar and I go, what are you talking?
You couldn't find it.
I go, what are you talking about?
We call it the electron microscope. I can't stand it.
Yeah.
I can't find it. And they're going to send it backwards because they've become eagle eyes.
I was like, that little tiny thing that looks completely normal. He's like, yeah, it's got to go back. Unbelievable.
Don't even get me started.
Paul, thank you for taking the time. Seriously.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to meet you.
It was great to meet you, too.
Maybe I should get glasses just like you.
I'll tell you where I get them from. Bar and Piera.
Bye.